Once upon a time, I had a personal challenge of finding some great talent to work with at ESPN, and now he's with me here on the Fantasy Focus Baseball. So I'd say it worked out pretty well. What about with ZipRecruiter? They knew there was a smarter way, so they built a platform that finds the right job candidates for you. Well, I could have used that a while ago when I hired Tristan. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day, and ZipRecruiter doesn't stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applications you receive so you never miss a great match. Now, our listeners to this show can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Carabel. That's K-A-R-A-B-E-L-L. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Carabel. ZipRecruiter.com/Carabel, because ZipRecruiter, it's the smartest way to hire.
I would hope so. I don't know, though. I'm quite a bit of a headache with the singing and the crazy jokes and the geeky stats.
This is the Fantasy Focus Baseball Podcast. Here are your hosts, Tristan Cockcroft and Eric Carabel.
All right, hi there, and welcome to Fantasy Focus Baseball. It is Thursday, March 22nd, 2018, 1 week until the games actually count. I am Eric. He is Tristan, who I did once hire. And I'd say that worked out pretty well, right, Tristan?
I would hope so. I don't know, though. I'm quite a bit of a headache with the singing and the crazy jokes and the geeky stats.
All right, so the jury's still out. Also with us today, producer Anthony Calatayud, researcher Kyle Sapi, and editorial watchdog Leo Howell. Lots to discuss on today's fine show. More injuries, more free agent signings. And Tristan says later on, not on my team. Here's the buzz. All right, so first up, Los Angeles Dodgers third baseman Justin Turner. Tristan, non-displaced fracture in his left wrist. That happened on Monday after our show. No surgery required, but this is a big deal. You know, I mean, this is a wrist, and the first thing I think of is power could be suppressed when he does come back, and we don't even know when he is coming back. Will it be in April? So how far did you drop him in your rankings?
Well, he was a sixth-round pick for me initially, and after this, I mean, it's a little guesswork, as you said, Eric, here. I mean, the two comps that people are throwing are Freddie Freeman missing 6 weeks with a comparable kind of injury a year ago. George Springer's another one where he missed 9 weeks with this one. There's some talk it could be 4 to 5 weeks, so I dropped him just outside of my top 100. I feel like once we get to about round 10, it's the right time to be thinking about him. If it's an on-base percentage angled league or a points league, I'd be more apt to draft him because I liked him better in those formats. And in terms of the overall value for him, the one thing I look at is that Turner's already missed a handful of games here and there over the past couple of years. So does this really create that much of an impact on his projection? I think we all had to assume he'd give you 135, 140 games anyway.
I think that's fair. The thing that worries me here in an ESPN league, okay, is that we only have 3 bench spots. And if you draft somebody with one of your first 10 picks who you already know is on the disabled list with an injury that could be a problem all season long, well, I think back to last year with Ian Desmond, who in the first week of March had his hand broken by a pitch, and he came back later than we expected. He got hurt again at some point, which Turner is likely to do. See, the thing here is, if we already know going in that Turner's going to miss 25 games for something else, that means he misses 50 to me. Like, is that fair to say? I don't want to deal with this. Like, I ranked him like 110, round 11 or 12, but now I'm thinking, I just don't want to deal with this at all.
I don't blame you, and it's a good point here, especially in the ESPN leagues, where, again, as you said, the 3 bench and the 1 DL spot, we're going to run into a problem now with the increased number of DL things. I've actually thrown the numbers out there. It was in the playbook about the 10-day DL, where the percentage of DL stints went up. It went up 37% last season. So you're right, Eric, as you're saying, if let's say Clayton Kershaw does have an injury the first week of the season, and you drafted Justin Turner. Right there, you've locked up 1 bench spot and your DL spot, because are you going to let Turner go if you spent a 10th, 11th round draft pick? I think the context in that one league is a little bit tricky.
All right, moving on. And who's filling in? Logan Forsythe will be the third baseman. Chase Utley will play regularly. They're not going to move Chris Taylor around, which is interesting because they have a lot of outfielders. So, I mean, at least that's what they say they're not going to do. So what are you doing in a deeper league, an NL-only league with your Dodgers now? Is Logan Forsythe suddenly more interesting, or do you not want him playing against right-handed pitching?
I kind of do want him playing against them. I don't think he's as bad as people grade him out to be against right-handers. I think, obviously, he's better in the matchups kind of angle here. But if you're in a 15-plus mixed or if you're in an NL-only, I think Logan Forsythe now is absolutely a guy you want in the later rounds, whereas before he was an endgame pick. Kind of interesting for him. The one guy I'm not jumping all on board on, and I'm getting questions about this one, is Austin Barnes, who has the second base eligibility in a lot of leagues. I don't think Barnes is going to see a lot of time at second base coming off that injury, so don't get your hopes up.
Which catcher would you rather draft, Barnes or Yasmani Grandal?
Grandal.
Why?
So part of that is the injury with Barnes, the fact he couldn't catch an awful lot during spring training. Another one is that Grandal does a good job of handling some of those specific pitchers. I know that Clayton Kershaw's numbers with him were much better, and I don't think the Dodgers can ignore that. Grandal also has quite a bit more power of the two of them. I think Barnes probably has the higher floor of these two players, but I'm going to go for the high ceiling of Grandal.
Let's talk about Daniel Murphy. We kind of knew all along he was not going to start the season on the active roster, but with him, we also don't know how long he's going to be out. Another infielder and a top 100 pick for sure in an ESPN league if he wasn't hurt. What are you doing with Murphy? Does the news that he's not going to start the season active change anything for you, or you were kind of assuming that anyway?
I was kind of assuming that, but because the Nationals didn't give us a specific estimated return for Daniel Murphy, I probably did rank him too generously, treat him like a top 75 overall player where maybe he really didn't belong in the top 100, and that's about where he is. That's about the line I'm drawing, same with Justin Turner. I think if he is healthy, he's a top 30 overall pick. I think he's that good a player. Last year, 49th on the player rater, so right there, he was a top 50 player in last year's value. I really anticipate I'm not going to get many shares of Daniel Murphy.
I agree, and later on, we might even find out he's on one of your lists. Murphy probably plays before Turner does. I still have Murphy in my top 100, but I did downgrade him a little bit based on this. More injuries, everyone's hurt. Steven Souza, strained shoulder. The Arizona outfielder, that happened on Wednesday, MRI pending today. This is another guy who health has not been kind to him. I am not on this guy's bandwagon. He batted .239 last year. Now he's going to a humidor place. What do you think of Souza this year?
The humidor is the thing I don't like about the move. I didn't like it at the point of the trade. I think people were I anticipated that people would overrate him, assuming that this was a great park upgrade for him. It's a park upgrade, but it's not massive. So I'm with you on that. The thing is, I actually think Souza's being drafted about where he should be anyway. So I might have been in before, but this one kind of makes me a little bit more worried. He does have the injury history. Let's not forget it. Not a guy that we should just forgive for all the past injury issues. But on the bright side here, if he does miss some time, it could mean a few more at-bats for Jared Dyson, a few of the stolen bases. I think that's something that could be a little interesting.
What's the better value right now? Justin Turner in round 11, Yuli Gurriel in round 21, 10 rounds later. What's the better value?
I would say that Gurriel is the better value of those two. So far, so good with his rehab. Probably only misses. He's probably back before Justin Turner. I think it'll be by a handy margin, probably 2 weeks plus. I don't love Gurriel's numbers. I don't. I do think he's a perfectly serviceable corner infielder in a mixed league, though.
I just had the chance late in a draft, just now, and I needed a first baseman, and Justin Bour and Logan Morrison and Gurriel were all out there. I chose Bour. Did I choose wisely?
I think you did. I like Justin Bour a lot. The biggest negative on Justin Bour, besides the injury late last year, yes, okay. The biggest obstacle is runs and RBI, because the Marlins lineup is weak and they're not going to turn it over an awful lot. We talk a lot about turning over the lineups and fueling the number of PAs and therefore the counting numbers, but I'm with you on Bour's ceiling. Bour's power ceiling is greater than Logan Morrison's, and it's unquestionably better than Gurriel's.
The Marlins will not finish last in the majors in runs scored.
Who will?
And neither will the Tigers. You know, I was thinking about that because I see positives in both those lineups, and I understand what you just said, and I don't want to fight with you, but I don't buy this. You know, Justin Bour can't score. Justin Bour's not going to score runs because the lineup's not deep. The top of the lineup's fine. Like Brian Anderson could bat second, he could bat fourth. Brian Anderson's going to be good. Cameron Maben, he can get on base, he can steal bases, he'll take his walks. I mean, they've got people that can. They just don't have a deep lineup. Like, their shortstop won't hit. I mean, there's issues there. Detroit, I mean, how much more can we say how much we love Nicholas Castellanos? I have him in my top 100. I mean, yeah. I never thought that would happen. So I just, who's last? I mean, it could be the Padres. I mean, they upgraded with Hosmer and Margot should be better, but is that actually a better lineup than what Miami and Detroit's thrown out there? Tampa Bay, is that better?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think my Rays are a strong contender there.
I think they're, yeah, that's why I was wondering where you'd go. The others I'd throw out there, I'd throw the Royals out there as well.
Absolutely.
And that's, a lot of that is questioning what they're going to do at the top of the lineup. I'd throw the White Sox as a potential candidate. So, by the way, for people listening, this could definitely help people for looking for the matchups for pitchers in the first couple of weeks of the season. But I know, Eric, to your point, I don't want to trash Justin Bour's potential for runs in RBI. My point here is that if we look at the teams that we project to finish, I'd say, in the bottom eight in terms of runs scored, it's going to be an obstacle for him. I feel like Justin Bour's potential for – like, there isn't potential for 120 RBI if he stays healthy. I think that's the limitation.
Yes. But you just made my point for me. If we name eight teams that are weak offensively and Bohr's team is only one of them, then that means that what you said doesn't matter as much, because if he ends up with a 30-90 line just like Logan Morrison, then he's not special. That's how I view that.
Yeah, and this is the thing. I don't want to exaggerate what I'm saying here. It's a factor. It's not a major factor. I think Bohr's power numbers, his potential, are much more important than anything having to do with the Marlins. And I'll tell you this. I've been in a lot of drafts where I'm finding that JT Realmuto, who's going to be hitting in a prime lineup spot, is becoming a ridiculous value. People are overrating it. You're absolutely right.
All right. So Alex Cobb is now a Baltimore Oriole. Not expected to start in the first week of the season, unlike Jake Arrieta and Lance Lynn, who appear to be ready. Not that that matters a big deal if you miss a week or two. Career 3.50 ERA. That's fine. But his K9 is low. He's not going to, I would say, the right ballpark for him. So when I found out that's where he was going, I had a bunch of questions about Baltimore, about the contract. But ultimately, for his statistics, he could have done, like, there were like 20 other places that I would have liked him more, including Philly, by the way.
I would have loved him in Philly. I would have gotten an actual active pitcher from a Tout Wars team, and now I've got to cut him because he's in the AL. But putting that aside, I'm with you. I don't think it's the best destination for him. The thing with Alex Cobb is, you know him as that extreme ground baller. Not so last year. He was under 50%. Actually had 48% on the ground ball rate last season, which means he's not getting those extreme grounders, minimizing contact. And I don't think that things like the defensive infield come into play as much as they would have a couple of years ago. What I liked about Cobb is that if he landed in the right place with a pitching coach who could work with him throughout the course of spring training and try and correct that changeup in his off-speed stuff, maybe he would hit his ceiling again from before the surgery. I'm not so sure he's going to do it here. It's a big, big downgrade in terms of ballparks, as you had said.
Cobb versus Lance Lynn. Who you got for this year? I think Lynn's underrated.
I do too, and I probably would say Lynn because of the volume. I think there's a much better chance Lynn gives you 25-plus more innings.
Really? That's why?
Mm-hmm.
I think he's going to give you 50 more strikeouts or 25 more strikeouts. I mean, all right.
Lynn is getting very underrated.
So perhaps Cobb will not be on your teams. Who else will not be on Tristan's teams? Well, this segment is brought to you by our friends at SeatGeek. So I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it is by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. Tristan has it as well. We can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, we can instantly find seats. In fact, both of us used SeatGeek last year to go to a baseball game, and then Tristan stuffed his face with a big turkey leg, and that was kind of interesting. But the process of getting into the game with SeatGeek was terrific, because SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever, save you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. And best of all, listeners to this fine show get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code FFB today. That's promo code FFB for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. All right, so Tristan, you've had a bunch of good articles this week. Not that you normally don't, but I'm just saying. So Bold Predictions was up earlier in the week, and that was pretty good. And I know Kyle and I both agree with you on Alex Bregman. He's going to be a fantasy monster. Already close to it. yeah. You had a lot of interesting things to say about closers. I've got my what is it called? I guess it's like every team's projected saves. That's coming out on Friday, and some of it differs from yours, but we'll let people read that for themselves. I think the biggest hot take you had in that article was Greg Bird with more home runs than Aaron Judge. I had to defend myself on Aaron Judge's ranking of number 20 yesterday by a colleague, and now you've got Bird over Judge. Maybe we shouldn't even have Judge in our top 20. What, I mean, if you think Bird's going to out homer Judge, then why do you have him ranked so well?
I actually don't have him in my top 20 anymore. I've felt like I'm concerned enough now about the fact that he did miss that little chunk of spring training time. And by the way, it doesn't mean I really am anti-Aaron Judge. It's just that I don't think he really grades as a second-round pick anymore. A couple other players I like more. This is more about Greg Bird than it is Judge. And actually, I'm getting – that's the one that I'm getting – by far the most feedback about. People are shocked by the idea that could suggest that Bird will hit more homers than Judge. But he's got a perfect swing for that ballpark, and the power grade is really not a far cry from Aaron Judge's. If there's going to be some regression to Aaron Judge, and by the way, I'll point out another piece out that we have up there on the site, Ron Chandler's about Aaron Judge, that he thinks he could regress in terms of the total home run number. I think it was that he said like he could drop by 10. Don't be shocked by that. Well, why can't Greg Bird hit 40 homers? If everything clicks right, he stays healthy all year, the batting average might not be good, but he'll give you a good on-base percentage, and in that ballpark with that short porch and right field, I absolutely think Bird could get to 40 in the best-case scenario.
If only somebody who was on the show had written an article about players that are going to hit 40 home runs this season, that would have been
nice. I heard somebody did that, yes. Which was it's a very enjoyable piece, and not only that, it forced you to give some love to one of my favorite players, a certain Cubs more in shape left fielder.
I never had anything against Kyle Schwarber. He's going to hit a ton of home runs. He looks great. I think the other day I was watching a game in the background. And he hit two to the opposite field. I mean, he looks fantastic. He just has to stay healthy. It would be nice if he hit 250 along the way. He's never going to play catcher again. Let's give up on that. But, yeah, I mean, I'm aboard Schwarber. Let's get to some of the guys you don't want. You know, Miguel Cabrera's ADP is outside the top 100. He almost seems worth it to me at that point of the draft, but you say no.
And one thing I got to point out here is that I did consider industry trends and other ADP sources, too, because one of the things I'm finding is that because the standard rankings that are in the game are the head-to-head roto categories, they're staying pretty close to the rankings that I have up on the site, so it's hard to find players that I think are overrated. Miguel Cabrera is almost universally going within the top 110 picks if you count all sources, all draft sources out there. And not only that, I'm seeing him go within the top 100 and handily so much more often than not. There are a lot of people out there who believe in Miguel Cabrera having a fully healthy season. I watched him in two expert leagues get easily into the 20s. That's aggressive. It's forgiving him for what was a very bad year last year, and he's 35 years old. I mean, Eric, I'm sure you'd probably agree with me. I don't think the power is coming back. I think we're looking at good batting average and modest power in the best case scenario.
Yeah, I think the best case scenario would be like 300 with 20 home runs. But
yeah, I'm with you on that.
And if I wrote an article, well, I did. I wrote a Do Not Draft article, but like Miguel Cabrera, I don't think he was on my list because I thought the value at that point was okay, but I'm just not going to take him. Like, it's separate. I know Leo's listening. It's separate to say do not draft and not on my team because there are players that, like, I'm just not going to get Kenley Jansen, but I don't have a problem with where he's being drafted, if that makes sense. Then again, if I'm not going to ever draft him, then why am I ranking him like that? Like, Gary Sanchez is on this list. You have half the Yankee team on this list. Gary Sanchez, who I also had to defend myself against yesterday, I rank him 59. He's going much better than that, but I won't even take him at 59. So I sense maybe you won't either. Why?
I'm not, and it's because everywhere I look, people are paying for the maximum value. And you know how obsessive I am with spreadsheets and stats. I have graded out what a player is worth compared to replacement value, what the relative value is here draft-wise. And Gary Sanchez, for him to put forth a year that's worth a top 30 pick in a one-catcher league or a top 20 pick, which, by the way, he's going in the top 20 in leagues that start two catchers and that go to 12 teams or deeper, to get to that level, he's going to have to bat something like 280 with 30-plus home runs, or he's going to have to bat 260 and hit nearly 40 homers. It's going to be extremely difficult for Sanchez to give you that much more value compared to what's out there, especially in an ESPN league, to be worth the draft pick and the ADP he's currently at.
I kind of think he can hit 280 with 30 home runs, but yeah, I agree. I don't want him. I agree with you.
But that's the best case scenario, no?
That's the best. You're right. Well, I don't want to take a catcher that early. They miss many more games than everyone else. there's some really good players I can get pick 50 or whatever he's going at. The one guy I don't agree with you here is Whit Merrifield. I love him. I think it's legit. If I knock him down five home runs, he's still a really, really valuable player because he's going to score runs. He's going to, I think he's hitting at least 280s, and he led the American League in stolen bases last year, which seems repeatable to me. So Whit Merrifield in the top 75, I'm all aboard that. I would get him. I think he's might be the only guy on your like not drafting list that I'm definitely getting. The rest of the list, I kind of agree with you on every part. So,
and Merrifield, I understand people wanting to draft him. I don't doubt the skills at all either. I've got to remind that I did, and I made this comparison, that I believed in the skills of Jonathan VR as well last year, and I've watched way too many of these players who come completely out of nowhere to have absolutely everything go right for them regress the following season. So obviously what's going to happen here is I'm going to have been way too aggressive on Jonathan VR and believed in it, and he's going to be a complete bust. And then this year I'm going to say, oh, I learned my lesson last year, and I'm going the other direction, and Merrifield's going to be great and improve, because that's just the way this stuff works.
In Wit, I trust. All right, and Tyler. don't forget it, Kyle. Today's Ask Round is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? Posting your position to job sites and waiting and waiting and waiting for the right people to see it. Well, ZipRecruiter learns what you're looking for, identifies people with the right experience, and invites them to apply to your job. And these invitations have revolutionized how you find your next hire. The right candidates are out there, and ZipRecruiter is how you find them. Businesses of all sizes trust ZipRecruiter for their hiring needs, and listeners to this fine show can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, for free. So just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Carabell. That's my name, K-A-R-A-B-E-L-L. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Carabell. ZipRecruiter, it's the smartest way to hire. I like this music. I do.
Leo would prefer I sing some Men at Work here.
Yeah, we had a really long discussion about Men at Work before the podcast. Probably longer than people have had in about 20 years about Men at Work.
And the roundabout way we got there, going through Scrubs and everything, was great.
Scrubs is awesome. I was watching an episode of that this morning.
It's one of the few shows I actually watch. Kyle and I have probably combined to watch about 3 hours of pop culture between us, and then it is like almost all, exclusively me watching Scrubs.
But they never show the singing episode in the reruns.
Right.
Why is that? Right?
Maybe there's like licensing issues with the songs? I don't know.
They had one song that maybe is, toes the line.
No, come on. Everything comes down to hash browns.
Right. Okay, that's not good. That's getting a little in a little too close proximity. Food, no, no.
All right, Kyle, what we got today?
Quite the segue. We've got Seth. He picks at the turn this year. He wants to know if you're picking at the turn in the standard 10-team league, who are you looking at with your first four picks?
We did a mock draft. Time is just all melded together. It might have been yesterday. It might have been the day before, where I had the turn and I took two starting pitchers. I took, I guess, the best two, right? I took Scherzer and Kluber. And the next two picks were Kershaw and Sale. And then the guy who was up next was like mad because, he thought he was getting one of the starting pitchers.
Yeah, I was
I had
the
never
nine.
Done that before.
Yeah, I was the nine. So I was on either side of you and I took the other two pitchers. So between the four of us.
Okay.
And in
you took Kershaw.
Yes. And in all of the category based drafts we've done for mock drafts, the four have gone 1, 2, 3, 4 right after each other every single time.
So that tells you a lot. And the fact that, Tristan might have been appalled that I had done that, like, I've never done that in any draft I cared about. Let's put it that way. So Tristan, I guess the right thing to do is probably to take best hitter and best pitcher there.
Probably, as long as, if the first pick of yours is a hitter and then the top four starters are off the board, then no, I would not be going in the direction of a pitcher. Don't force it. But I'm seeing that at 10-11, it's highly likely that at least one and probably a minimum of two of the big four, Kershaw, Scherzer, Kluber, Sale, whatever order you want them, are going to be there. And I do highly endorse it. As I've been saying a lot, I like the idea of getting the one ace and then waiting a good chunk of time, building up your offense, and then taking some of the higher upside pitchers pitchers you find in the later rounds. So I'd pick between him. You know, maybe Kershaw gets to you. Maybe it's Scherzer. Maybe it's Chris Sale. Take one of those guys. And I'm finding that some interesting upside bats are also available there. Carlos Correa has often slipped. In the rare cases, Paul Goldschmidt does. Chris Bryant also, I think, is worth consideration there. Manny Machado.
All right. Yeah, I kind of like the team I ended up with, even taking the two starting pitchers. Leo, did you like your team?
Yeah, I mean, you basically get to punt pitching forever. Like, you get a couple closers along the way, but you just get to stock up on bats, and that feels nice because there are a lot of sort of equal bats once you got past those first couple of rounds that you can just kind of pick the guys you want, like Bregman, Benintendi, guys like that can kind of be your cornerstones.
It was a weird mock draft. Kyle took Tyler Chatwood in round five. That was weird. That was just a little bit weird.
I find a lot of times that Bregman and Benintendi don't make it to the 40. That's the one.
Yeah.
The tough part about having the swing picks at 10 and 11 is that it's really difficult to project what's going to be remaining at 40. If people in your league draft well, you could be dipping down into the, you know, top closers, the Kenley Jansons. You might be looking at, you know, Severino types.
Well, Tristan, you'll just take Justin Upton there, right?
Oh, if he gets to 40, absolutely.
And he has in a couple of our mocks. He's a forgotten man sometimes.
I don't get it. What's the hate for Justin Upton?
Nobody hates him. Why do you assume this hate? I don't think there's any hate at all. He's going in the top 40.
Justin Upton last year, in terms of player rater, was 28th overall. In points leagues, he was 43rd overall.
Okay, so Nelson Cruz was too. Well, I'm just saying, like, you're using a word there that I don't think is fair.
Nelson Cruz was not in the top 40 last year.
On the player rater?
Nope. 43rd. I like the guy, too. And I'm with you on this. Nelson Cruz also gets a lot of hate. I'm absolutely with you on that. But I don't understand why people are so anti Justin Upton, so anti Nelson Cruz. It makes no sense to me.
All right, what's next, Kyle?
Alrighty, Tony notices we all love Bregman, which is 100% accurate and factually correct. But he notices that Tristan has Benintendi ranked nearly a round higher in his dynasty ranks. He's wondering if the ceiling is that much higher for the Red Sox star.
I would have Bregman over Benintendi this year and in a dynasty. Tristan, explain yourself.
I'm tempted to as well. I could go in either direction. I do feel like that Benintendi is going to give you a stronger base of stolen bases for the long haul. And I don't think that the hitting skills he brings to the table are really a far cry from what Bregman is going to give you anyway. That's the main reason I put him ahead, is just that in terms of the projection, the steals are going to drive the value. But again, I don't really have a major issue with that. Like, for example, if we knew Bregman was going to lock in at shortstop, I talk a lot about how shortstop is a rich, young position here with a lot of talent going forward. The position scarcity is irrelevant. But it's still good to get a shortstop locked in there if that's where he ends up long term.
All right, fair enough. What's next?
I liked it. It basically sounded like Tristan was saying, Kyle and Eric, you guys have this one right on Bregman. That's what I heard right there.
My ranks don't say that.
All right, Ryan plays in an OBP league instead of batting average. He's wondering if you could order your top five hitters for him in the new format.
So that's like Tat Wars that you did last weekend. So yep. I guess you should answer this. How much did that affect your dollar values? If you're talking about an overall top five, I mean, in general, the top hitters are also getting on base a lot. So like Altuve is on base is over 400. And Mike Trout obviously is. I think Joey Votto is probably not. Is he a top five pick overall in that
absolutely.
Format? I don't know if he is. He is.
I think
top
he is.
Five. Okay.
I absolutely think he is. Yeah.
You would take him over Harper. In an on-base percentage league, you would take Joey Votto over Bryce Harper, over Paul Goldschmidt, over Mookie Betts?
It's hard for me to do that over Betts. It's hard for me to do that over Harper, but I think he still gets into the top five. The one guy that I think is going to shock everybody that I take out of my top five in an on-base, I would take Altuve out of my top five. I would also consider taking Nolan Arenado out of my top five. For me, it would probably go Trout. I would probably go Trout, Arenado, Betts, Harper, and Votto.
Well, I just don't understand that at all. I mean, Altuve out of 410. I grant you that maybe the most valuable part of his game is the 346 batting average, and we don't project anybody else to hit, you know, above 330. But why would you take him out of your top five? You know he's going to hit for a high average and take enough walks to get on base. So I don't know if I could make any case to take Mookie Betts over Altuve.
But the reason with, well, yeah, I mean, okay, Betts versus Altuve, maybe. I mean, I'd have to sit down and actually write down the numbers to be exact here. But the thing with Altuve is the 410 on base was a little higher than the career norm. Guys like Votto and Bryce Harper give you such an advantage in that category that it's not so much a matter of not liking Altuve and not liking Arenado and not liking players like that. It's more a matter of how much better it makes players like Joey Votto. I mean, the on-base thing made Mike Trout. I don't know if you saw this, Eric, in Tout Wars AL this past weekend. Mike Trout soared past $50 in the on-base percentage league. He was a $43 buy in labor, and I think he was 52 or something like that in Tout Wars. Now, that's a little much for my tastes, but I do think Trout is definitively more value in the on-base league.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Okay, what's next?
All right, so it sounds like Joey Votto's the main gainer there. Nicholas. With steals at such a premium this year, why no love for Cameron Maybin? He's not being drafted in over 90% of leagues. He went 33 out of 41 on steal attempts in 114 games last year.
Yeah, it's a little bit mystifying, and I don't know where I rank him. Maybe I'm playing a role in this. I think the issue with Cameron Maybin is obvious. He gets hurt a lot, and he's probably not going to hit for a decent batting average, and Tristan will tell you he's not going to score any runs because he's on a terrible offense. And I wouldn't even argue that point to some degree. Like, Maybin to me is like a guy who plays 110 games, but in those games, he probably steals 25 bases. Is 25 enough? See, the thing is, like, if you take out the big three, Billy Hamilton, D. Gordon, and Trey Turner, there's nobody else that we project for 40 stolen bases. There's a handful that we project for 30. How do you build a team in a mixed league? Do you need, like, 100 stolen bases out of the gate? Do you need 150? Because this isn't like power where you just have to keep on drafting it. With stolen bases, you know, you're going to get 10 from this guy, 15 from that guy, 5 from your catcher. You know, it can add up. How do you even approach that? Do you even want to draft a guy like Cameron Maybin at all?
I don't want to in our standard game. And I mean, yeah, it largely comes down to the injury history here. By the way, I don't want to get characterized as somebody who's putting that much weight on the runs and RBIs. Again, it's an exaggeration of the point on this. It's a small factor. It's the things that I talk about in terms of the tiebreakers. What's bothering me about Maybin this season, besides the injuries, is what exactly is his role for the Marlins? I think he's a starter. But he's not a top-of-the-order starter. The last time that they ran out a lineup that looked like what they'd used during the regular season, they went Brinson at 1, Dietrich at 2, Starlin Castro and Bohr were 3-4, then it was Brian Anderson, and then it was Cameron Maybin. To me, I want to be getting some premium runs. I want the maximized plate appearances on a team like this for Maybin. And they're not going to come from that spot. He's not going to give you good batting average. I think he's a useful guy in the late rounds because you're going to need to hit that maybe 120 to 140 target in a mixed league. But I'm not going to pay a premium for that player. I think there's better all around types that you could get to fill the category.
I agree with you. And you know, that lineup is not that bad. It's not a potent lineup, but it's not embarrassing. Brinson's making the team, right?
Based on the fact they're talking about leadoff for Lewis Brinson, yes. And I've said this before at the time of the trade that I think that they should. That this is the perfect team to allow Lewis Brinson to develop at the major league level. They should do it. They should push him into the leadoff spot, get aggressive if they like what they see during spring training. I like the move. What I don't like about the Marlins, and Eric, I'll see what you think about this one. I don't like the depth. It's not the lineup that I don't like. It's the depth. When Maybin goes down, who steps in?
Well, obviously, there's not a lot of depth here, okay? And Derek Dietrich is a platoon player. So, like, and he shouldn't be playing left field. You're right. There's nobody to step in. But, like, the lineup, when you look at it, it's like, okay, Brinson, Dietrich. Dietrich hits righties. You could also lead off with JT Realmuto. Castro and Bohr are established players. Brian Anderson, I think, will hit 20 home runs. Maybin. The bottom line on Maybin is this. He's going to miss a lot of time with various things. He gets hurt. 24 stolen bases. Does that matter? Is that an important number? Because you can get 24 stolen bases from a lot of guys and a lot of guys who may not be drafted. Like, I'm looking at our projections here. At this point, Delino DeShields will be drafted, I think, in every league. Jonathan Villar, we've talked him up enough that unless they announce that Eric Sogard is a starter, I think Villar is starting in every league. I mean, he's being drafted in every ESPN 10-teamer. Bradley Zimmer, when people look at the projections we have for him, they're really generous. He's going to get drafted in every league. Malik Smith, like, would you, if you could have Malik Smith or Maybin, you would take Malik Smith, wouldn't you? I would.
I, Yeah, I would, if only because in the mixed league context, I'd rather have the guy who has the higher ceiling for that one specific category. If I feel like I'm only taking the player to address that one spot, Maben's homers, Maben's runs don't matter to me as much as Malik Smith filling the category decently and meeting my minimum. That's the major difference between the two. But, I mean, Eric, you and I have I think, talked about this a good amount, too, is that there is a divide between mixed league and AL and NL-only rankings when you get down to the lower tiers. When you're expanding the pool like that, in an NL-only league, Maben then becomes a lot more attractive player. So does Brinson on his own team there, because he does contribute a little bit in terms of stolen bases. But in a mixed league context, no, I'm not excited by a guy like this. I think they're a fringe draft pick.
I agree. We projected only 16 players to steal more bases than Ronald Acuna, who was already in the minor leagues. I've moved up Acuna to like number 100 in my rankings. I am all in, and I don't care that he's missing the first 2 weeks. If I told you that Ronald Acuna was going to be on the Braves active roster to start the season, but he was dealing with like, you know, like a little bit of a groin injury that wasn't going to disable him, you would take him number 100. But so many people, oh, he's already in AAA. Now I don't want him. Are you crazy? This guy's going to be a fantasy monster. I'd be surprised if Acuna doesn't sail past the projections we have for him. We project 15 home runs, 58 RBI. I think he's batting cleanup when he comes up. 28 steals, 253. I think he eclipses every one of those numbers, except maybe the steals, because he might bat, you know, he might bat third, he might bat fourth, depending on Freeman. I think Ronald Acuna is going to be awesome. I've moved him up to number 100, and that might not even be enough. Is that just crazy, or do you agree?
Top 100 is aggressive for a redraft league. I can, without a doubt, make a case for it, because he fills the categories. That's extremely important, and I'm with you that the fact he got demoted really doesn't matter. He was tearing it up during spring training. I remember seeing the comp here with the spring numbers between him and Chris Bryant, who went almost an identical path here. The date that's being projected for him buying the extra year of service time is April 13th. It doesn't
that's
matter.
Ridiculous.
April 13th,
yeah.
That's 2 weeks tops. And I'll tell you, I like it better that he's in the minors and we know he'll come up on April 13th than if he entered the season with an injury. I think it's better for him knowing that this is exactly the projection. This is when he's coming up. Yeah, I don't have an issue. I can make the top 100 case.
I agree. And by the way, I don't want to use the word appalled. I'm really disappointed. Disappointed is not the word either, because I don't really care. But like so many of our colleagues, either people we work with or people that are in the industry, have just ripped apart the Braves doing this. And they're just missing an obvious point. Every major league team would demote a player like Ronald Acuna for 2 weeks. Phillies are going to do it with Kingery too. Every team would do this because of the arcane rules that are set up by baseball that the union themselves agreed to. If you don't like it, change it when the next time it comes around. But Chris Bryant still won Rookie of the Year honors, was still a monster fantasy option. So will Acuna be. I can't believe people are writing, don't blame the Braves, blame the system. The system is what's the problem. If I told you in a fantasy league, Tristan, that say it's an established player. All right, Mookie Betts, okay? Mookie Betts, you have him in a keeper league, but you have a 3-year contract. But yep. I'll allow you to keep him for a fourth year if you keep him on your bench for the first 2 weeks of April. Of course you would do that, wouldn't you?
The context would come into play there, how competitive I am in the current state. But yeah, I would absolutely be considering that rule wrinkle. As a matter of fact, this does come into the case in dynasty leagues. I do know people who have farm teams where the farm team rules allow you to carry the player over for free the following year. And, you know, granted, Acuna could have made the team on opening day. If you don't have to promote him until the end of April and that does not count as a year in your dynasty league, you carry him over for an extra season. That's absolutely a time you're going to keep him stashed there. I have done this in one of my keeper leagues. You should do it too. I'm with you. It's a bad rule. I hate the rule. I wish that baseball would change it. No denying that. And I think that's what everybody in the industry is talking about, is that it's a bad rule and it should be changed. But it's a rule. And if there's an advantage to be had for it, win. Win.
Hey, don't blame the Braves. All right, any more questions, Kyle?
We've got one more. You guys have been talking about Acuna and how much he's impressed lately moving up draft boards. Steven wants to know some other spring training stars that have put themselves either on your radar or up in your draft boards over the last few weeks.
You know what? I was thinking I should even write a blog about that, because there are players that I moved up the last time I adjusted my rankings, and it's almost like I didn't have a reason to do it. Like, why was I doing that? Am I buying into their spring? Like Dan Vogelbach of Seattle. I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but last I looked, a lot of power, more walks than strikeouts. I can't believe he's not going to be the starting first baseman against right-handed pitching for the Mariners. And if so, why couldn't Dan Vogelbach do what Justin Bour's going to do? He could do exactly that. Exactly that. So Vogelbach, I think I moved him up. I don't know if he was in my top 300, but he should be. I'll do another update before the weekends. But that's a guy who moved up. Ryan McMahon moved down. I think the Rockies are demoting him. Now, I don't it, but the ridiculous signing of Carlos Gonzalez because they felt bad for him or whatever, he doesn't make the team better. Ryan McMahon, I think, would make the team better than Carlos Gonzalez, but I moved him. Matt Davidson, Matt Davidson's power. Matt Davidson should have been on my list of players that could hit 40 home runs. I really believe Matt Davidson could bat 230 with 40 home runs this year. I really do. He moved up my rankings. Name some players that you moved up your rankings.
So Vogelbach's OPS was 1357 so far this spring. Some of the others, and these are incremental gains for the most part for me. I don't like to react too much to the spring numbers, but Jose Perella is definitely opening eyes. And as I said before about the idea of him being a utility man for the Padres, absolutely a legit strategy for them, I think. Jorge Soler, based on the fact that he was just so awful last year, the fact that some of the adjustments he did during the offseason are paying off with spring numbers, makes him a player I am considering as a late round dart throw, especially in the deeper leagues. Definitely somebody to keep an eye on. Marco Gonzalez of the Mariners, I've been talking him up a good amount. I've seen several outings of his, looks very good. Certainly a guy I think can stick in a rotation and give you a handful of useful starts. So where is he was not even in consideration in any leagues anywhere about a month ago. Now I definitely think he is. Julio Teheran having a very good spring training. That's encouraging based on the bad year last year. I'm on board with that. Aaron Sanchez. I think Aaron Sanchez has probably done more than any player during spring training to answer so many of the questions about the health. I know the blisters could come back at any state, but the fact that he looks just as good to me when I watch him as 2 years ago makes me think, yeah, you know what? We probably should be paying what we were exactly 1 year ago. And Eric, I think you made that point a week ago.
I've got him ranked like 125 overall.
Might be too low.
It might be. And then I defended myself against Sanchez yesterday, and the defense I used was, in his great year 2 years ago, he was barely a top 20 fantasy starter because the strikeout rate was kind of tepid. You know, it wasn't a lot of strikeouts. And that scares me a little bit. So I do like Aaron Sanchez. And if I had to rank 10 players who I've moved up the most this spring, and not because of just spring numbers, just because I either had valued wrong or I remembered how much I liked them, Acuna probably number one. Aaron Sanchez might be the number one pitcher there in terms of I just moved him up a lot. I don't think I forgot him. I just think I remembered how good he was. Good, not great. You know, he was good. Yep.
I want to throw another one your way and see what you think of him.
All right.
Lucas Giolito.
I would like it better if he wasn't in the American League. But and as long as he doesn't walk people. See, that the problem I have with Giolito and some of the other guys on that staff, not James Shields, but like, you know, strikeout guys, young guys, is what's the best we could expect from their ERA? Like, can you see Giolito having better than a 350 ERA anytime soon? I mean, I could see him striking people out. I think the White Sox are going to be just as good in like 2 years as the Phillies and the Braves and the other teams that are rebuilding. Like, the White Sox have a ton of minor league talent. Wait till Eloy comes up. Kopech's going to be a monster. That team, nobody's talking about them like they are the Braves and the Phillies. I can't see Giolito having an ERA better than 350, like from just watching him pitch the last couple of seasons. I don't know.
Giolito's a tough read. He's a tough read because most of the critics are pointing out that he's not getting anywhere near the Ks. He didn't last year as he did when he was a minor league prospect, a top prospect rising the ranks. And the stat I continue to throw as a reply to that one is that last year, I know the K rate itself was only 52nd from the day that he joined that rotation forward, 52nd in the league among the qualifiers. But the swinging strike rate in terms of the ability for his stuff to miss bats was 30th best. To me, that's a wide divide. It suggests some bad luck going on there. And he's got 17 Ks and 4 walks and 17 and two-thirds innings this spring training. Doesn't radically change my ranking, but it suggests to me that maybe he has arrived. Maybe there is something more here. I'm with you, Eric, though. I don't think he can get a 350 ERA. I think you're looking at a 4 ERA, and if he can get you 150, 160 Ks, I think that's going to pay off at that price.
All right, that's all for the Hash Brown segment. Thank you so much for sending in your questions, and do so again every Monday and Thursday. The Fantasy Focus Baseball will be recorded and sent out as soon as possible by our awesome producer, Anthony Calatayude. And Kyle Soppe, the awesome researcher, will go through on Twitter the hash browns and come up with some good ones, and we'll try to answer them on every show. So the next show will be Monday. This is the last weekend before the season starts. 1 week from today, Thursday, is when the season starts. And final question for you, Tristan. Anything else you're really watching, you know, at this point? I mean, obviously we're looking for injuries and demotions, lineups a little bit, but is there any, I mean, name me one or two things you're looking for this weekend, and Kyle, I'll ask you next, that that could affect how you draft. I know we all have drafts still coming up. Anything that might happen in the next couple of days that might affect your philosophy?
So two big things to check over this weekend. One are the declarations of some spring jobs. And in particular, I'm looking at the closer jobs. What the official announcements come down from places like Arizona, the Angels, the White Sox, Texas. All of those I think are going to be pretty relevant for fantasy. The other one too is I think we're approaching now the point where the DL moves are going to be officially made. And Eric and I, you and I talk about this a lot during spring training. You can't DL a player in fantasy leagues until they're officially placed on the DL by their real teams. With Thursday's opening day, it's going to start happening at some point in the next few days. So we're going to see whether any of these players like Daniel Murphy, who's going to go on the DL, get officially placed. You can move them. Eduardo Rodriguez next comes to mind. I think he's going to miss probably a week of the season.
These guys are not going to be placed on the DL until next Thursday at noon. Daniel Murphy's not getting DL today.
I know
they're
that, but
until
I mean
the last second. They always do.
Some don't. But it's why I suggest, and I'll tell you this, I go on the MLB roster moves thing on Twitter. That usually will post it the minute a team does that. That's the quickest I've seen for getting guys on the DL.
Kyle, Leo, any situations you're watching this final weekend?
Tristan stole my answer a little bit, but I'm just going to reinforce it anyway. I'm going with Arizona's closer situation. I've been drafting Archie Bradley like he's a top 15 closer, so I'm looking for some kind of confirmation or at least nothing to say he's not closing, so that's what I'm watching.
Super Watchdog, you got anything you're watching?
I'm very interested in how good the Rays are going to be. I really don't. Will Kevin Kiermaier be the best number three hitter in baseball is basically what I'm watching.
Leo Howell, number three starter for the Tampa Bay Rays.
I think he's editing an MMA article. Okay, what else? You know what? We have no clarity on the Brewers. Is Ryan Braun really playing first base? Because I think he is. I'm not so sure now, and I've got shares at Domingo Santana in a bunch of places, and now I'm starting to get a little bit worried that they haven't discussed this at all, and that they're just going to, like, they might even platoon Domingo Santana with Eric Thames. That scares me.
Me too.
And you know what else scares me? Today's National Goof Off Day. And like when I think of goof offs, I think of Tristan. So Tristan, how are you gonna celebrate National Goof Off Day?
My kind of day.
Yeah, I'm gonna celebrate by shoveling a foot of snow in about 5 minutes. Thank you all for listening to our show. We really do appreciate it. The season is upon us. So for producer Anthony Calatayud, researcher Kyle Soppy, editorial watchdog Leo Howell, all the great people at ESPN that make this show sing and work. And for Tristan, I am Eric.
Sing.
Have an awesome weekend.
Everything is awesome.
Darkness.
The theme song for the Fantasy Focus was created and performed by Eric Hutchinson. Check out more of his music at erichutchinson.com. Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Focus. For more great podcasts, log on to the iTunes Music Store or Pod Center at ESPNRadio.com.